Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my Bulwark colleague, Andrew Egger. Andrew, it's Tariff Palooza. All the tariffs are happening. Donald Trump is out there with two thumbs setting new trade policy as we speak. We're going to get 100% tariff on movies. Interesting. Very curious to hear how that works. We're getting furniture tariffs. We have Scott Bessent very upset that after we bailed out Argentina, the little disheveled hair MAGA down there went and turned around and sold soybeans to the Chinese. Everything is kind of topsy-turvy, and I'm here for it. Because this is some exquisite stove touching. And as you know, I like nothing more than watching people touch the hot stove. Before we get started, though, if you would like to follow bad things happening to the worst people, you should subscribe to this channel. Hit like, hit subscribe, follow our feed. Andrew, which is your favorite tariff of the new tariff regime, which is maybe kind of happening or not?
I love that you have already baked me in, like that I'm bought in on the presupposition that all this stuff is good as before I've even opened my mouth, which I don't agree with at all. I'm very unhappy with all of
this. What is good? What is bad, Andrew? We're beyond such words.
Yeah. I mean, like maybe in a universe where like you actually could just sort of like silo off all of this pain to only people who had pulled a lever for Donald Trump last year in the election. I still wouldn't agree with you, actually, but it'd be easier to agree with you.
Okay.
than in the current case, which is just that we are going from sort of tariff disaster to tariff disaster. Donald Trump has rewired all global trade, to fit his own sort of very dearly held protectionist model for how the U.S. is going to enter into its next golden age. And not only that, not only are we, you know, still finally starting to see the actual shocks hit from what we have now sort of settled into as the new synthesis from the old way and the Liberation Day tariffs from back in April that all finally clunked into place over the summer. Not only do we have that to deal with, but Donald Trump still just loves tariffs. It's his favorite thing to reach for anytime he has any kind of economic like problem that's presented to him. He's like, we'll just slap a tariff on that. And so it compounds, right? And it compounds for the dumbest stuff, for the silliest reasons. I mean, like, you gloss, I genuinely don't know which of those two that you mentioned from the two tweets that just went up on Truth Social this morning. These are like the two new policies. I guess we can talk about those. The one is look, foreign movie studios are eating our lunch. It's like taking candy from a baby that all these other countries are able to make these good movies now. The South Koreans are making K-pop movies, and it's crazy. It's crazy out there. They're making lots of money in the U.S.
Where are great American demon hunters? Shouldn't we also have boy band and girl band demon hunters that we animate right here in America?
Yeah. Come on, man. It's like they're eating our lunch. So that's one of them. And then the other one, which is like almost crazier, at least if you go by the wording of the tweet. And I don't know, none of us know whether he meant it this way or whether he was just being sloppy or what. But what he said was, look, North Carolina, their furniture industry has really been, really hurt by a lot of imported furniture. So what we're going to do is we're going to place a tariff on all countries that don't agree to buy all their furniture from the United States. What he said was not just we are going to place a tariff on imports of foreign furniture. It was any country out there do not consent to start buying your furniture immediately from our great North Carolina furniture manufacturers, we are going to put a retaliatory tariff on you for that. That was the plain text of the tweet. It's crazy. It's crazy out there. It's like, and again, this is on all of every single new tariff thing you always have to keep in mind is on top of these incredibly sort of strangulatory and bad and distortionary tariffs that are economy-wide now on basically every country out there, some more than others. But it's just, this is where we are.
We have separate tariffs for upholstered furniture and then a different set of tariffs for vanities and cabinets. I guess that makes sense for reasons. Wayfair, hardest hit, I would imagine. Right? What is Wayfair going to do? I am a little more struck by the movie tariffs, because that seems even more nonsensical to me. Like, movies are not a good. Movies are a service, right? And he says he's going to put 100% tariffs on movies. What does that mean? Does that mean that, so Disney finances a movie, then Trump says that your local AMC has to charge double for, like, who pays the tariff for this? Is it only for movies that are exhibited theatrically in a theater? Or does streaming content count as well? If you are Netflix, a global company, and you are making content in Moldova or whatever, can you do your things get tariffed because they're only stream? And the answer, of course, is that none of this makes sense, right? But there is
Danielle, you're getting bogged down in the details. These are all questions, policy questions to be sorted out later, man. By U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer. You know, he's a big picture guy. You know, 100% tariff on movies, man. Just figure it out. Figure it out.
And looming over all this, of course, is the Supreme Court, which may decide to save Trump from himself. Which is, just as a brief aside, that's kind of what I think they're going to do. I think the Supreme Court, this Supreme Court majority, is happy to subsume principles in ways that help Trump, but is willing to stand up for principles if they think they're saving Trump from himself. So I think they're going to invalidate the tariffs. Where are you on it? If you had to put $5 on this.
I might go the opposite way. Ooh. Of you, just to have a conversation about it, right? Because I can totally see that argument. I can also see the argument that, like, if you take the politics, this is like the basic, like, analytical question about this Supreme Court this term, right? Is it like, are they actually just doing politics? Are they actually, like, sort of like triangulating for Trump, or which would also be bad, are they so sort of like outside of the politics of some of this stuff that they are just sort of like out there in this la la land world where they're like, isn't it fun that we get to investigate these interesting, not previously tested issues about executive power and who wields it in the independent agencies and stuff? And boy, isn't it fun that, like, you know, finally we're getting some good cases that test some of these things, and let's really dig down on the case law and you know, you can construct an argument that would go the opposite way, where because they are so bought in on this sort of principle of you know, the unitary executive and the power of the executive branch rests in the executive, that maybe they will take the expansive view of these trade powers, like they have taken the expansive view of so many other executive powers during this term. But if they don't do that, I think you have obviously hit on the most likely reason why.
Let me tell you a little secret, Andrew, about not just this Supreme Court, but all Supreme Courts. It's always just politics. That's what it is. The Supreme Court is always just politics. Not just this Supreme Court, but every Supreme Court, because that's the end of the system.
You say it's always just politics, it only takes one counterexample to disprove that.
On meaningful decisions, right? They will rule on procedure stuff here and there. But
Neil Gorsuch in that sort of trans discrimination workplace case a couple of years ago. Like, I don't know. There are moments where these guys, I mean, they take themselves seriously as thinkers, and obviously they're political beings too. We're getting kind of far afield from
We should get back to tariffs. Soybean tariffs still happening. Is he going to bail out our great patriotic soybean farmers?
We honestly should have done a video just on this, because this is so crazy. Like, I've written about this a couple times in Morning Shots the last couple of days. You will remember we did this all before, right? I covered it for the Weekly Standard, you know, back in 2017, 2018, like the early ramp up of the trade war with China, where, you know, Donald Trump was sort of, you know, paying pennies to the dollar compared to the dollars he's paying now for these trade wars. But it was very clear even then that one of the most hurt groups from these tit for tat trade wars with China in particular was going to be American farmers, because American soybean farmers in particular used to sell an enormous number of soybeans to China to feed their sort of domestic hog production over there. That's what soybeans are for, you know, is like animal feed. Much of it was going to China. At that time, China realized that because of that, they were totally overexposed to like political retaliation, right? So here you have all these farmers, they're in, you know, the American heartland, they are Trump voting constituencies. And China's like, great, well, let's hit them. We buy a lot of stuff from them. We could easily stop doing that. We could buy from South America instead, you know, Brazil and Argentina's sort of burgeoning, you know, agricultural industry down there. And that's what they did. And it really hurt farmers here. And as a result of that, Donald Trump, you know, reached down into his bag of goodies and was like, you know, our great patriotic American farmers have really been bearing the brunt of this, so we're going to bail them out to the tune of tens of billions of dollars a year for the rest of my term, or as he would put it, you know, until we win the trade war was kind of his, you know, on the far side of it, our farmers are going to be doing awesome. They're going to be able to sell everywhere. It's going to be this new golden age. But until then, we will just make you whole with these.
Is that welfare? $1 billion
payments.
Yeah, is that welfare, I mean, or is it only welfare when it goes to black and brown people? It's so hard to
know. You
get
to the end of the first Trump term, and there's a lot of coverage of this, of like, okay, this has basically created a new kind of economic dependency where there are these payouts, you know, hand over fist with very little oversight going out of the Department of Agriculture, out of the federal government, you know, to just farmers, and just kind of just it's a cash bonanza out there. And they were hurting. I mean, it's like there are questions about whether it made them whole at all. You know, it's not like they probably, all things being equal, they probably would have rather sold their stuff to China and just gone on doing it. But like, that was the problem. That was the first term. And now you get to now.
Is that why all those farmers went and voted for Kamala Harris in 2024? Because they believed in the dignity of their work? Is that why? Because Iowa went for Harris last time around, right? It was like a tremendous swing. Or am I missing that?
Well, there was this one poll, JVL.
Boy, it's so weird.
Yeah. I mean, you're correct. We get to today. Trump's talking about the same stuff again. He's in the Oval Office the other day. He's like, well, you know, I think we're going to start, you know, making some payouts out of our tariff revenues. Is how he framed it. You know, again, to start protecting these farmers from this short term pain. Meanwhile, the pain is humongous. China has I don't know if you've seen these stats. China has not bought U.S. soybeans in any quantities since May. Like, it's just completely gone. And a big part of the reason why it's completely gone is because China has been able to just go back to those markets that profited so much from the first term trade war.
Like Argentina.
Argentina and these countries have been kind of scaling up this industrial agriculture for years.
We just bailed out Argentina, right?
Yeah.
Within the last few days.
It's also,
because America First requires bailing out Argentina because they have a junior MAGA. And then he went and turned around and sold some more soybeans. And Scott Bessent is very upset about that. Anyway, we'll get to that.
Well, and that's just the free market, right? I mean, down there, it's like, wow, we have China. No, but honestly, like China's coming and calling. If you're an Argentinian farmer, it's just like, great, right? They're like, okay, sure. Well, they'll pay a bunch more money for my soybeans than they were going to otherwise. I'm going to invest in more and more, you know, production and scale to be able to meet that demand. 5 years ago, during the first trade war, I was already doing that. I already was scaling up because it was suddenly so much more lucrative. And that has now gotten me in a position where I can pants the American farmer that much worse this time. I mean, it's crazy. And yet we're running the same playbook again. There's no end in sight. I mean, like, and when Trump talks about, you know, what he's going to do for American farmers, it is just, it's so clear just from listening to him talk that he thinks that, like, he's going to blow this gigantic hole in like what U.S. industrial agriculture looks like in the country now. And he's going to make it up by getting these concessions on the margins. Like, he's going to knock down Canada's, you know, embargo on U.S. dairy. And he's going to knock down Japan's, you know, refusal to accept U.S. rice. I mean, it's crazy. It betrays a complete like just failure to grapple with like any of the actual economic realities on the ground. I mean, like, I guess that's sort of like a dog bites man story at this point, is Donald Trump like just existing in this economic funhouse mirror land when it comes to these trade policies, but it is actively now already having enormous economic damage. And we're just talking about agriculture, but it's happening everywhere.
Yeah, this is, again, this goes to my thesis that like the kitchen table issues thing was always just cover. Like it isn't actually about kitchen tables issues. It's like Trump is going to be mean to the people you hate. And if your business has to suffer for it, or your farm has to get blowed up from it, so what? It's a small price to pay for self-esteem, Michael. I want to hit on something that is actually really sinister in all of this. And I forget who made this point. I think it was Heather Cox Richardson, which is that one of the things the tariffs do is they provide Trump a workaround from the Constitution requiring all funds to be congressionally mandated and approved, because the tariff money goes straight to the U.S. Treasury and is the purview of the executive branch. So that becomes essentially Trump's private financing for whatever he wants. Do we think that he was smart enough to think that's what he was doing? In addition to like trying to turn ICE into like a private police force and trying to turn the military into his private military force, the tariffs, part of it was, yeah, and I'm going to get my own national bank that I can use to do whatever I want with the money.
What is so strange about all of this is the degree to which all of that was anticipatable, you know, before the election, right? Again, we were like writing about this at the time, that this was a new found power and a newfound lever of control that Donald Trump was preparing to give himself. When I think back to the election, it remains sort of strange to me that there was so little talk of tariffs in general. You know, Kamala Harris had one line that she would routinely roll out in her speeches talking about, you know, the Trump national sales tax, which like was plainly like her way of trying to cut through the fact that this is sort of like a wonky issue to make it more real for people. But like, he was always planning to reorganize the entire economy in this way. And like, people didn't really notice, you know, like searches for like what tariffs were spiked like crazy in the weeks after the election, you know, way higher than ever before. Let me read you one line from this New York. There's this New York Times piece up just this morning. Small businesses wither under Trump's tariffs is the headline. It's hard to breathe. I don't know whether this woman's a Trump voter, JVL, so try to hold back here. But just listen to this quote. I mean, Kimberly Hyde, the owner of Beet and Yarrow, a flower shop in Denver, so that doesn't really code MAGA, does it, said she was caught off guard by how much the trade policy would drain her business. Quote, "I don't know why it didn't occur to me that flowers would also be tariffed," said Ms. Hyde, who sells flowers from countries including Colombia and Ecuador and ceramic and metal bases from China and India. So, like, this is a woman whose entire business is extremely exposed to tariffs, right? She imports everything she sells. And yet, I don't think it's at all unreasonable. And I don't think it's all that rare that like a million people have like saw tariffs before the election as this sort of like wonky, out there, abstract thing that was like going to happen someplace else, and did not actually think about like, I buy things from overseas to run my business, and I'm going to have to start paying like 40% more on all those imports if this guy gets through and does what he said he's going to do. And that's the weird disconnect that I still have not gotten my head around how exactly it all went down that way.
All right. Well, you are not sure if the lady from that piece is a Trump voter. I have one who I'm sure is a Trump voter. This is from Hannah Knowles as the reporter. Can't tell. It's on like Microsoft News, so I can't tell you what the actual home publication is on it. Jessie Meadows told her mother-in-law not to panic when business slowed at the family flower shop last year. They just needed to hold on a little longer until Donald Trump got back in office. She's still waiting for the turnaround. The phone that used to ring all day during Trump's first term sits mostly quiet. Customers are still reluctant to spend on extra, like flowers in her corner of small town Georgia. A box of faux berries from China recently arrived at the shop with a note explaining that they cost 17% more because of Trump's tariffs. Fruit's getting outrageous now, Meadows, 36, lamented to a customer one recent afternoon. Explaining the rising price of the gift basket the woman orders every year for a friend's birthday. Then goes on to list the other things she was expecting. She was expecting energy costs to be cut in half, immediately bring prices down, drain the swamp, free IVF, and ending the war in Ukraine in 24 hours. And she's been disappointed by all this. I mean, I guess this is, I'm roping you into a long running conversation that Sarah and I have, which is, are people stupid? Or are they not stupid and they know what they want to know? Because it's one of those two, right? And obviously, 330 million people in the country, the answer is both. There are some people who are just dumb. Dumb as a bag of rocks, who really did think, well, I thought we were going to get free IVF everywhere. But the median American, is the median American that dumb? Or do they just know what they want to know? Do you see what I'm getting at, Andrew?
Yeah, of course. I think there's a lot of knowing what you want to know going on everywhere all the time, right? And like, you can go back to, again, this has been the hallmark of the tariff stuff all throughout this second Trump term as well, where it's not just sort of like the flower shop owners and the small business mom and pop shop people just trying to get by who have been kind of gobsmacked by the effects of this. But if you will recall, we had a giant stock market panic right after Liberation Day, yep. Where where the entire financial industry and, you know, all of the traders, all the smartest guys in the room whose job it is to see around corners and all this stuff, looked at one another and were like, oh shit, he was serious about all that stuff. Like, what's going on? And then when he kind of pulled out of the deepest part of that dive, they were all kind of like, oh, thank goodness that's over. And they all went back to normal. And we're now in yet another period of sort of like bizarre, like all of these, you know, red lights are flashing on the control panel. And yet everybody's just kind of going about their business as though it's going to be fine. Again, like not just at the level of, you know, you own a flower shop, but at the level of you trade stocks for a living on the New York Stock Exchange. You know what I mean? So it's like, there's a certain amount of willful blindness that affects us all, I would say.
Not me, but speak for yourself.
Yeah, everyone but you.
I would say this. the long-term version of the story will wind up being the most important version, and it will be the one that nobody sees, the one that will be completely invisible, which is that it isn't just the imposition of tariffs. It's the mindless on-again, off-again nature of it. The total chaos that is then commingled with Trump's lingering popularity. I am sorry, but he's still somewhere between 44% approval, which, given the externalities around like what is happening in the real world, is astonishing. And what this says to the rest of the global order is that you can't make plans around the United States. The United States is still very large and has a lot of money. And so you have to be prepared to be able to take advantage of that when you can. When there's an opportunity to make a buck by dealing with the United States, you should probably take it. But in terms of like ordering your long-term interests, you can't do that with any confidence, right? You can't go like, hey, let's encourage our companies to go make $100 million investments in physical plants in the United States. Are you kidding? Are you high? And this, you know, mixed with the healthcare stuff, mixed with the pharmaceutical tariffs, which are coming online, mixed with the slashing in NIH and research funding, and the pushing out of foreign students to universities, which is like long been one of America's big strategic advantages, means that the rest of the world is going to move on because they have to. And they can't just say, oh, well, it's just Trump. You know, it's just this one weird guy. The truth is the American people know better. They're chomping at the bit. They have buyer's remorse. Anybody who's rational looks at America. And I come back to this all the time. I forget who it was. I think it was like the Minister of Defense from Poland or something, who said something to the equivalent of, we cannot make long-term defense plans based around the whims of 40,000 people in Wisconsin every 4 years. And that's right for NATO, and it's also going to be right about the global economic order. This is what you all voted for. Enjoy it. Andrew, thanks for sitting with me, buddy. It was great stove touching, and I can tell you enjoyed it, even if you're determined to pretend that you didn't.
I like talking about it.
Guys, hit like, hit subscribe, follow the channel. We'll be back with more soon.